Okay, so thank you. So today I will talk about the distributed stochastic gradient optimization. So as we all know, so we are now entering the big data era. So both humans and machines are creating lots of data every day. So say for example, so YouTube is creating a lot of videos, Flickr, and say the US healthcare websites is also collecting a lot of data. And not to mention, say for example, banks or surveillance videos, and also in fact, say for example, in science, so say for example, astronomy, so we are also collecting a lot of and a lot of data. So say for example, some simple statistics, it's estimated that Facebook is creating something like more than 12 terabytes of data every day. And so by 2020, we are expected to have something like 35 sectabytes across the globe. So this is a huge amount of data. So in the old days, usually we do machine learning on a single machine. Okay, so if we have a bigger data set, then we will just increase the CPU, increase the core or the RAM or the disk. Okay, but obviously, this is not going to work if your data set becomes too big. So not to mention storing the data sets can be a big problem. So nowadays, we are always interested in distributed processing. So there are two main kinds of distributed architectures. So the first one is based on shared memory. So there is a common shared memory space, and so all the variables are here. So this is the case for servers and high-end workstations and so on, or multi-core processors, which is also very commonly used nowadays. So the programming model is very simple, because basically each program just sees one shared memory. However, well, usually it is not that scalable. And so another solution is to use distributed memory. So in this case, so you have a lot of machines, and then each node has its own memory. And all these machines are connected by a high-speed communication network. So the advantage is that it is usually very scalable. Okay, so if you want more, you have more data, you want more processing power, then you can simply add more machines to the network. But on the other hand, because the memory resides on different nodes, okay, so you have to devise a way to somehow distribute or collect data of and the information from all the various nodes and then distribute them to all the nodes. So the algorithm becomes more complicated. So in this talk, we will focus on one very simple supervised learning scenario. So namely that we have a dataset D with n samples, and then we want to minimize some criterion. Okay, say for example, the training error, and then this is what we, this is the mathematical expression or the objective that we want to minimize. So FIW is the loss, okay, or which possibly includes some regularization, okay, for the sample I. So of course, well, as I said, so big data, so we have a big N. So, but fortunately, we also have a number of machines. So the question now is how to solve this problem with N machines. So the idea is, of course, very simple. So we simply put the small N samples over the big N machines, okay? And so we split all the samples, okay? And then each machine stores a local subset of the data. And usually we assume a master-slave configuration. So we have a master, and then we have a number of workers, okay, doing the jobs. And then, of course, the master has to communicate with all the workers, but we assume that the workers don't need to communicate among themselves. So, as just mentioned by Tao-Xin, so SGD is very popular nowadays. So, it's very popular for big data problems. Okay, and here we assume a distributed version of SGD. So, as I said, we have a lot of workers, and we assume that the workers work independently and also asynchronously. So, they don't need to coordinate among themselves. And the operation performed by each worker is also very simple. So basically, it first has to pull the parameter from the server. And then based on the local sample, the local data set that it uses, okay, it will sample a batch, a mini batch, okay, a sample or a mini batch, okay, in order to compute the corresponding gradient on this mini batch. And then it pushes this gradient, okay, to the server. And then the server will receive all the gradients from the worker, okay? And then whenever it receives a gradient update, then it will update the corresponding parameter, okay, by SGD, okay? So namely that it will then well, look at the based on the gradient and then perform a step to reduce the corresponding loss, okay? So this is very simple. And in particular, well, eta t is the learning rate, and typically eta t has to be decaying, okay, in order to guarantee convergence. And indeed, it is sublinear. And more recently, okay, so there is something called the delayed proximal gradient, DPG. The idea is that's because you are working in a distributed environment, so the gradients may be outdated, meaning that, well, the time you pull the gradient, okay, to the time you update the, you pull the parameter, to the time you update the parameter, okay, there may be some time lapse, okay. So here we assume that the copy of W that this worker obtains is delayed by tau t iterations. And then, as I said before, well, based on the local data subset, you draw a sample or a mini-batch and then compute the corresponding gradient, which, of course, is kind of delayed because it is based on the delayed parameter. And then you perform a standard update, okay, so to obtain the W hat. So notice that here we assume that we have a constant learning rate. And then this worker will push this W hat, okay, back to the server. And then the server will do the updates as follows. So it will look at its current W parameter and then do a convex combination with this new W hat. So the updates equation is still very simple. But the good thing is that although here we use a constant learning rate, it can be shown that the error, okay, which is my F here, well, will converge linearly, okay, to the ground truth. So namely, that's the difference between the error and the optimal solution, okay, will be decayed like this one. And then as I said, so typically the eta, okay, here can be much larger than that's typically used by the HCD, because HCD's learning rates has to be decreasing, okay, so that means that we can have faster convergence. So on the other hand, because DPG is using delayed gradient, so it also slows down the convergence. So there are pros and cons. And another important problem with the DPG is that there is an epsilon here, meaning that you cannot reduce this to zero even if you run a lot of steps. So it is only guaranteed to converge within a solution, a neighborhood of this optimal solution. And of course, you can try to reduce epsilon. So indeed, you can reduce eta. It can be shown that if you reduce eta, then the learning rate, then you will reduce epsilon. But of course, reducing the learning rate intuitively will slow down convergence. In fact, it can be shown that the rho will also be increased. So again, there is a dilemma here. So as we know, SGD is very simple and scalable, okay? But as I said, learning rate has to be decreasing. Recently, there is another family of methods, which is called variance reduction methods. The goal is that, well, the reason that you have to decrease the learning rate is that's because the stochastic gradient is very noisy, has a very large variance. So the idea is if you can somehow reduce the variance, then you can use a larger learning rate and possibly a constant learning rate. So that gives a lot of related methods. And one of the most popular methods is the so-called SVRG, stochastic variance reduced gradient. Okay, so this will be the focus of this talk. The advantage of this method is that it requires no extra space for the intermediate gradients and also the dual variables. So this is how the SVRG operates. So it operates in a number of stages, and within each stage, there are a number of iterations. Okay, so the most important equation is step 7. So this is kind of similar. This is similar to the traditional SGD update. So except that instead of just using the simple stochastic gradients here, it uses this particular gradient, which is a variance reduced. So what it does is that, so this is the current stochastic gradient computed based on the parameter WD on the sample I. And then this is W tilde, okay, is some past parameter estimate that you store up across different epochs. So you also compute the gradient at this using this W tilde, and then you plus this batch gradient, okay? So this is the batch gradient computed at the beginning of each epoch, okay? So you have two, in each iteration, you have two stochastic gradients, and then this batch gradient, which can be saved. So the good thing, as I said, is that even if you use a constant learning rate, okay, it can be shown that the variance of this gradient estimate can go to zero as time increases. And moreover, the whole algorithm can be shown to have linear convergence to the optimal solution. And so this is a single machine version And recently, it has been extended to the shared memory systems. So the question that we naturally ask is whether it can be extended to a distributed asynchronous learning setting. So what we are going to propose is a hybrid of the DBG and the SVLG. And as I said, it will also use a constant learning rate and also guarantee to converge linearly to the optimal solution. So this is how it works. So let's first look at the standard SVLG. Okay, so this is the updates equation. So what we are going to do is to replace this by a very similar equation, which involves V and W bar. So it may look a bit complicated, but we may consider the very simple case when, say, tau t is equal to 0, meaning that there is no delay. Okay, so when there is no delay, then of course this term becomes the standard variance reduced gradient. And also, tau t is equal to 0, then W bar also becomes the variance reduced gradient descent, the gradient. Okay, so Vt will be equal to Wt, but W bar t. And in fact, in this case, this whole equation will be reduced back to this equation. So in other words, when there is no delay, then this is just standard SVLG, as expected. So let's compare this with the DBG. Okay, so this is our updates rule here. Okay, so for this update rule, well, obviously it is very similar to that of DPG. So this is DPG. So we also have a combination of two weight estimates. Okay. So, however, there are some differences. The first difference is that in the DPG, okay, so this W hat is obtained by gradient descent using the standard gradient. Okay. Whereas the W bar here, as you can see, is based on the variance reduced gradient. And the other advantage is that, or difference is that, this gradient, okay, is also used in the definition of Vt. So whereas in DPG, it only uses the Wt. So, and we argue that potentially it is faster. Why? Because if you look at the very simple theta is equal to 0 case, okay, then DPG, when theta is equal to 0, then Wt plus 1 is simply equal to Wt. So of course, there is no progress. So that means that it does not work. Whereas if you use theta is equal to 0 here, then Wt plus 1 will be equal to Vt, and then you will still be able to update your parameter. So in fact, this is the same as just doing asynchronous SVLG. That is SVLG using a delayed gradient, okay? But of course, typically we don't use theta is equal to zero, okay? We want to use theta greater than zero. So meaning that, so we use something which is similar to asynchronous SVLG, but then we also use the parameter estimate from DPG, okay? So notice that the DPG estimate here is based on this, the parameter at this iteration, and also the corresponding gradient at this iteration. So they are kind of consistent. So it suggests that this can give us some reliable information. Okay, so that's why empirically, as we will see later on, this will be more efficient than just doing asynchronous SVLG. And as in other distributed systems, so the gradient, although it is delayed, it cannot be too old. So typically, we will use a bound delay condition, meaning that the tau t cannot be larger than some, must be smaller than some constant tau. Okay, so this tau measures the maximum duration between the time the gradient is computed or obtained and the time it is used. And of course, well, you may want to increase tau so that you can have a more asynchronous system, okay, more asynchronous. However, if tau is large, then the gradients can be very low, very old, okay, and so that means that the gradient is very noisy, and so it may also hurt convergence. So there is a trade-off here. And moreover, in a distributed system, so the workers have to communicate the gradient to the server, okay, and then the master has to send the parameter back to the workers. So there is some communication overhead, and this communication overhead obviously is proportional to how many gradients you compute. So one way to reduce the communication overhead is to use mini-batch, meaning that you don't do one communication after computing just one gradient. You use a mini-batch to compute the gradient. So kind of you lump the gradients together before you send it out. And here we talk about the distributed implementation. So we have one scheduler, P workers, and one server. So for the workers, they will divide the whole data set into P disjoint subsets, and then each worker will keep a local copy of the parameter. And then the server will keep the most updated copy of the parameter, and also because we are using SVRG, so we also keep a past parameter version. So the scheduler is very simple. It just schedules the task. So it issues a number of update tasks to the workers. And then after some time, okay, it will issue an evaluation task to the workers and the server. And then all these will somehow, as we will see later on, will compare the local objective. And then the server, the scheduler can see whether the progress is good enough. If it is yes, then it will stop all the workers and the server. So as for the workers, so they will send a parameter pull request to pull the parameter from the server. And then check and see if this is an update task. Then as I said, it will pick a sample, pick a mini batch, okay, from the local subset of the data, and then compute the mini batch gradient, and also perform the local parameter update. And then push all these to the server. And whereas if this is an evaluation task, then okay, it will push the gradients to the server and push the local objective to the server, to the scheduler. Okay, so for the server, it is similar. So it requests the task. There is an update task, so it waits till all the update tasks before T minus tau have finished to ensure that the bound delay condition is satisfied. And then if it is an evaluation task, it makes sure that all the update tasks before T have finished. So as to make sure that all the workers have finished the parameter updates. And so that the server contains the most recent parameter. And then for the server, again, it's very similar. So when you want to update the server, update the parameter, it uses this equation, okay, which we have seen earlier. And then if it is an evaluation task, it simply updates the local copy, the most recent copy of the parameter. So notice that the learning rate here does not depend on the number of workers, okay? So whereas other algorithms like the SGT, it does. So we also have some convergence proof saying that, well, if it satisfies some properties, then the objective function will converge to the optimal objective value, okay, linearly. And similarly, the parameters will also converge to the true parameter, okay, at a linear rate. And notice that although DPG also converges linearly, so it can only converge within the tolerance of epsilon. Maybe I skipped something. Okay, so here's the experiment. So we do logistics regression on two data sets using the Google Cloud platform. So we compare with, say, Dampo SGT, Pentium, DPG, DPG with the by replacing the gradients with variance reduced gradients, and then asynchronous SVRG, and then also the proposed algorithm. So these are the results. So as you can see, all these are the other algorithms. The black curve corresponds to our algorithm. So this is the objective, and then this is the time. So as you can see, so our algorithm is the fastest, okay? So even faster than VG and asynchronous SVRG. And we also varied the number of our workers. So from 16 to 128. So as you can see, obviously, the more workers, the faster the convergence. And in fact, on MNIST, it was three times faster. On DNA, it is six times faster. So this is not a linear speedup, but say six, this is a factor of eight, so it is kind of close. So we also do some analysis on the time. So as you can see, so the blue part corresponds to the computing time, and the red part corresponds to the communication time. So as you have more and more workers, then the computation time reduces, as you expect, and the communication time also is reduced, okay? So that means that, well, the main advantage is that we can reduce the computation time, okay, without increasing the communication time. So the conclusion is that this is an algorithm which is distributed in nature and works asynchronously. It has variance reduction, so it basically integrates these two algorithms, SVRG and DPG, so it has a theoretical convergence, and also empirically, it reduces the communication cost significantly, and also is faster and more accurate than the other algorithms. Thank you.
Yeah, but still, thank you so much for the long introduction. So today I'm going to talk about when and when not to use distributed machine learning. Well, I don't assume that people here are machine learning experts. So in fact, I don't plan to give a very technical talks. So instead, I want to give some general thoughts about the current area of distributed machine learning. So here's the outline of the talk. So I will have an introduction and then talk about challenges to handle large-scale data, then have some conclusions. So now we are at the time of big data. So every day we are handling bigger and bigger data. However, should we really apply distributed machine learning or not is actually a complicated issue. So in this talk, I will try to discuss different aspects in answering this question. So I will aim at a general discussion, so rather than getting into some technical details. So before talking about distributed machine learning, let's ask a question. So what are traditional ways for people to use to do machine learning? Okay. Well, the answer is actually quite simple. So the usual way is that you go to get a machine learning tool, in particular some integrated ones, which includes many methods. So for example, in the early days of machine learning, you can go to get Weka, and R is also popular, or you can nowadays, you can use the Python tool like scikit-learn. So that's for, those things include many, many methods. But on the other hand, if you're particularly interested in certain machine learning methods, you can go to download some specific ones. Now after you have the package, then basically you need to pre-process your raw data, and then you run machine learning algorithms. Then you conduct analysis on your results. Okay. So that's a typical workflow traditionally. But for such a workflow, basically your assumption is that everything is stored in the RAM of one computer. But this traditional way may not work, may no longer work, because now our data may be too large to be stored in the RAM of one computer. Okay. But not only that, another big problem is that traditionally machine learning algorithms, they were designed by assuming that data are stored in the computer memory. Okay. Or by assuming that data can be easily accessed. Yeah, that's the assumption of many machine learning algorithms. So by such an assumption, so now in a distributed environment, so accessing data becomes difficult. So those machine learning algorithms may no longer work because you cannot access the same data many, many times. Yeah. Okay, so now let's try to be serious about how to handle really those large-scale data. So there are some possible approaches if you want to handle very large data sets. So the first possibility is, okay, try to get rich so you can buy a machine with, say, several terabytes of memory. Right? Well, that's one possibility. So what's the advantage of using such an approach? Well, the immediate advantage is you can directly use existing machine learning methods as well as tools. Okay. But then, of course, you only have several terabytes of memory, so you are still constrained by the number of data you can handle. Okay, so that's one thing. But memory is just one issue. You need to load the data from disk to memory, right? But loading data can be time-consuming in some situations. Okay. And not only that, another disadvantage is that suppose your data is already in a distributed environment. You need to do subsampling. I mean, to downsample data to one machine for analysis. Okay, so there are advantages also as well as disadvantages. Then the second possible approach is that you do something called disk-level machine learning. So that means you assume that data can be stored in the computer disk, which is bigger than the computer memory. Okay, so now you can handle larger data. However, existing machine learning methods may no longer work because now data access becomes expensive. Yeah. But certainly, this is a possibility. And finally, the third way is then you go to do distributed machine learning. So the advantage is that you are going to get parallel data loading, and also because you are using multiple machines, you may get fault tolerance. But the problem is that designing distributed machine learning methods may not be easy. You need to consider, well, actually from the previous talk, so you may we see that communication cost sometimes is a concern. And now also you need to take care of the synchronization. And writing such parallel programs, of course, becomes more complicated. So currently there are various types of arguments about how to handle large-scale data, right? I just mentioned three possible approaches. So some people say that using a single machine with huge memory is the way to go. Okay. So they have several arguments. So one argument is that they say that in general, the computer memory in one machine is getting bigger and bigger. And actually, from certain statistics, so for example, in Katie Nagy's news last year, they actually say that the increase of computer memory has been much faster than the increase of typical data sets. Well, here I mean typical data sets, so that means the majority of data sets we are handling. Well, if that's the case, well, then looks like the one computer model seems to work, right? Then another argument supporting this viewpoint is that some people say there are not so many big data. They say only big internet companies, they do have big data. Yeah, that's another argument. But then you say, I mentioned that if you have lots of data, but loading data from disk to memory can be time consuming, right? But then those people say, well, no, we have a way to handle such a situation. There are certain techniques. So for example, if you store data in binary format, then loading data from disk to memory can also be quite efficient. Okay, so that can be solved. Then another argument is, some people say, if you want to do deep analysis on a data set, then the way you do it is, you have a machine with a huge memory, then you just load the data once, because now loading data is expensive. Then once you load it, then basically you just keep it in memory for subsequent analysis. It's like when you are using MATLAB or when you are using R, then you have something called workspace. The data is always there. Okay, so that's the way to do it. Then another argument is saying that some people say if you have done proper feature engineering or certain techniques, then you don't really need so many data points. Okay, so that's the arguments favoring this single machine model. But in contrast, some people say the other way around. They say, no, in future data analytics, everything should be done in a distributed environment. Well, the argument is simple because they say big data is everywhere. Now, even just a simple health application. So if you run an activity a classification app on your cell phone, so every day it will generate lots of data, right? But so what do we think? Should we still do the traditional single machine learning, or we do distributed machine learning? Well, there are different answers. In my opinion, okay, this is my opinion, I think different types of approaches. I mean, the traditional single machine approach will still be there. But for certain applications, we do really need distributed machine learning. So those different types of approaches, they will still exist. But then the question is, that when to use which becomes the big issue, right? So I will try to discuss this is that. So if you are in a situation to decide whether you want to do distributed machine learning or not, then what are your concerns or considerations? So the first consideration I would like to discuss is about the loading time. Okay. So loading time, so traditionally in machine learning area, we never worry about the loading time of data. Okay, if you go to read machine learning papers, I would assure that 99% of papers never talk about the loading time of data. But we will argue that in the big data situation, well, the loading time can be more important. Okay, so let me consider a simple example to illustrate this viewpoint, why loading time now becomes very important. So let's try to do a job of very simple linear classification on a document data set called RCV1, which is about 500,000 training instances. And let's try just a typical linear classifier. So if you run it, then on a typical personal computer, say for example this laptop, then if you run it, then you may find out the total running time is say 50 seconds. Well, now you say, wow, 50 seconds for training 500,000 instances. This is not too bad. But if you look at it carefully, you find out that more than 40 seconds are actually spent on loading data. So in fact, for this data, only 2 seconds are enough to get stable test accuracy. So this is an example that loading time is much longer than the running time, or say the training time. Right. Now you ask a question, why traditionally in machine learning application, or before, right, before big data machine learning, these kind of situations do not happen? Okay, so here's the reason. We need to talk a bit about the complexity of loading data and as well as running the algorithm. So assume that now your memory hierarchy has only a disk and also the CPU, and your number of data is called L. Right. So we know that the loading time should be linear to your number of data. So that's like L times a constant, which is maybe a big one. And how about the running time of a machine learning algorithm, which is usually proportional to the power of the number of data. Okay. So let's put this L to the power of Q here, and make time a constant. And you to train a data set, of course, you need to read the data set once. Therefore, this Q must be greater or equal to 1. Okay. So this becomes the comparison between loading time as well as running time. So traditionally, many machine learning algorithms, they are the so-called nonlinear algorithms. So that means this power Q is actually greater than 1. Right. Therefore, that explains why before in machine learning areas, people seldom care about loading time. But you have this L to the power of Q, and Q is greater than 1. So when L is large, this L to Q is going to be much bigger than just the linear 10L here. So that means running time is going to be much longer than loading time. That's the situation before. Okay, people use the so-called nonlinear algorithms. But now the problem is, now in the big data situation, the data is so big, you cannot afford to run a nonlinear algorithm. Usually you run a kind of linear algorithm. Okay, so for example, like a stochastic gradient type of methods for efficiency. So in that situation, this Q is no longer greater than 1. So suppose Q is 1. Then this big constant becomes an important factor. That becomes a situation that the loading time can be longer than the running time. Yeah. So we end up with a situation. So if you're using a linear algorithm, then we end up with a situation that loading time may dominate. Okay. So how to solve this situation? Well, if you do distributed machine learning, then you can do parallel data loading. Okay, that can somehow solve this issue. Because if you have, say, 100 machines, then each machine is responsible for loading some data. Okay, so by such a parallel data loading, actually you effectively reduce your loading time. Okay, so the next consideration I want to talk about is fault tolerance. So in a distributed environment, then some data, they can be replicated across machines. So if one fails, then others are still available. So you can still access data to finish the training, right? But the problem is that having this support may not be easy. Right? So for example, so traditionally in high performance computing, people use MPI, But MPI has no fault tolerance support, but it's more efficient. But if you are using MapReduce, say based on Hadoop, then you do get fault tolerance, but it is slow. Okay. But we also notice that in machine learning applications, very often the training is done offline. So that means you may have enough time for doing the training. So you need to consider whether you really need fault tolerance or not. Okay. Because if the training is done offline and one machine fails, well, that may not be a big deal. May not be a big deal. You just restart the whole job, right? Yeah. Then not only that, okay, so you can restart the job, right? Because the training is done offline. And not only that, if somehow the training does not finish on time, but you still usually machine learning algorithm is an iterative process. So if you just terminate at that point, you still get a model. That model may still be useful. Okay. So that means sometimes you may not need fault tolerance. Okay. So in that sense, if you have an implementation of MPI without fault tolerance, that may be fine for medium-sized problems. Okay, because the chance for medium-sized problems without many machines, say hundreds of machines, but then the chance that some machines fail during your training may be quite low. Okay, however, these fault tolerance may be needed if your data is very huge and you use lots of machines. Okay, because in that situation, restarting a job on thousands of machines, that's a huge waste of resources, right? So this is an interesting example that actually data size may actually affect your selection of the programming framework. Because I just mentioned that if your data is actually medium-sized, you use hundreds of machines, probably you don't need fault tolerance, but you have lots more data than you do need. Then the next issue I want to discuss about distributed machine learning is now you need to consider communication and synchronization. So what do we mean communication and synchronization is that now different nodes, they need to communicate with each other. Okay, so let's consider an example of doing matrix vector product. So the way to do matrix vector product is like this. Now in a distributed environment, so each machine, each node has some local data. So you have x1 until xp, then each node can do its local vector product, then you do a summation. So synchronization means that those nodes, different nodes, they don't finish at the same time. So then people have to wait for slower machines. So, and the communication means that now you want to sum those vectors up. Okay, so then some message need to be passed from one machine to another machine. Yeah. So that's what we mean communication. Then workflow is another concern in deciding whether you want to do distributed machine learning or not. In particular, if your data are already distributedly stored, then it's not convenient to reduce some data, to subsample some data to one machine. Actually, I talked to some engineers. They told me that the real difficulty of not using single machine model is because collecting data from distributed environment to that one machine becomes a much more painful process than doing the running the machine, doing the training after. Yeah. So if you need to frequently retrain the model, then workflow issue becomes important. And the programming framework is of course another concern. So we already mentioned that writing and running a distributed program is a bit complicated, right? And not only that, for we machine learning people to write machine learning algorithms, then we depend on the platforms. But platforms are still being actively developed. So some time ago, there was this Hadoop. Okay, then we write a distributed machine learning algorithm on Hadoop. But then there's a Spark. Then we need to change the algorithm. Okay, that's not very good. Yeah. So now the distributed machine learning implementations, they become platform dependent. This is not very good. So is there a way so we can design distributed machine learning algorithms in a platform independent way? That's actually a very good research issue. Okay, So the title of this talk is to ask when or when not to use distributed machine learning. But this is actually not an easy question to answer. Let's see a quote from Yang Li Kong before. So he said that he has seen people insisting on using Hadoop for data sets that could be fit in a small flash drive. Well, of course, in such a situation, there's no reason of doing that, right? And here's another quote from Shaver. So he's now a vice president of engineering at Quora. So in his talk, he actually argued that you don't need to distribute it, your machine learning algorithm. He actually showed some example. He said that, his opinion is that he supports the idea that most data set can be fit into one single machine. Actually, he showed one practical example in their engineering project. So their engineers implement a Spark implementation. And then the running time is actually 6 hours or something. And the developing time is 4 days. But then when they do single machine, then things can be done in 10 minutes. But I think this is an extreme example. Okay, yeah. But anyway, that happens. So I think I'm running out of time. So let me quickly go to the conclusion. So I think big data or distributed machine learning is still in its infancy. Yeah. So for all those algorithms and tools, they are still being actively developed. But in my opinion, I think various settings, including say single machine or doing distributed machine learning, they will still all still exist. But we just need to be careful in deciding when to use which, because you want to find out the optimal setting for your application. Okay, so thank you very much for your attention.
Thanks a lot for the introduction. Professor Guo and Professor Lin actually did a very good prepare for my talk. So gives you a lot of free knowledge on the distributed machine learning and the machine learning itself. Today, I would like to further talk about the challenge in the big data, big model learning process. Before that, I actually doing a little advertising. So right now, we in Microsoft are developing a very powerful like distributed machine learning toolkit named the DMTK. Actually, inside the DMTK, we provide a distributed machine learning framework and also provide a lot useful machine learning algorithms. And researchers in this literature can help, can just use that tool and conduct follow-up research and also use the tool to handle handle your real problems. And we also work together with like Microsoft CNTK team to build its very powerful deep learning toolkit and to help the community to really easily adapt to such kind of deep learning toolkit and produce very good deep learning models. And in this talk, actually, I would like not go too much in this part, as a lot of talk has talking about the AI. It's really a very prosperous era of AI, and a lot of application has been really pushed forward by advancing the AI and deep learning. Deep learning has really been the driving force in this part, and a lot of deep learning model has been proposed. Actually, in this market, in the deep learning, it's really very a lot of competition inside. It's you can see there's a lot of useful tools like developing by various companies and communities. These are some very famous ones, and like TensorFlow, Caffe, CyanoTorch. I think probably most of you has been used or heard one of that. And as Tao has mentioned, the key thing inside of this competition actually is how really it is can those tools can really handle the training efficiently and provide very rich algorithm set and also can scale up the training. Today I'm talking about the scale up problem. First of all, I think in the deep learning part, right now people have talked a lot about the big model and the parallel training. There are three pillars in this part. One is about the data. The other is about model and also the big cluster to compute. And in these three parts, actually, people already talk a lot about really leverage deep learning to handle this a lot of application problem. But it can be this kind of a double-edged sword because like in each of these pillars, we can find problems. Like for big data itself, not every application can get rich big data, rich data itself. And for the big model problem, because the model parameter is so complicated, in that case, the training and optimization would be very difficult. And also, to some extent, those huge models can hardly be fit into some kind of hardware and efficiently train. And also, like if we use multiple machines to train to speed up the training process, like Professor Guo has mentioned, there is a lot of problem like how to synchronize the training, whether the sync up of the training procedure will somehow even slow down the training process, like the optimization process. So actually, on each part of the problems, we in the MSR Asia, the machine learning team has really come up with some preliminary research work. And like the first one, we are trying to leverage a method called dual learning that can leverage the unlabeled data for training a machine translation model. I think in the next session, Tao will talk about that. And on the other part, like the focus in this talk, I will mention the other two. One is about how we handle a very big model training in RNN model based on this kind of, we call that two component RNN. And the other one is on the parallel training. We invented another asynchronous algorithm that can handle the problem in asynchronous training. So, okay, the first one I will talk about the big model training problem. This figure actually gives you a very common method on train the language model. Each word is associated with input embedding vector and output embedding vector. So you have the sequence of input terms and then you predict the next term based on this recurrent neural network. And the thing here I would like to mention is the model size. If we simply calculate the model size given a vocabulary size and the embedding size, it is somehow to 80 gigabytes. And compare with the current state of art GPUs, this model size is very hard to fit into the state of art GPU, even the latest one. Then efficient training based on this kind of model will be a problem. And what we propose here is kind of a model comparison process. The left side actually is the current practice. We use a vector for each term, then to represent this term, and then you learn this vector model. But this size is the size of this model is kind of is corresponding to the vocabulary size. And then we propose another called two-component shared embedding method. In this method, actually every word is kind of projecting to two-dimensional vector. By this kind of decomposition, you can find there's a lot of words sharing the same row or sharing the same column. In that case, the vector model itself is reduced into a 2 square root of V. The size is clearly reduced. And the training procedure also changed to this new figure. We, instead of just predicting every term, we need to follow the row and column logic and predict the row, give the rows, and then you predict the column index, and then continue make this sequence prediction. And also the training procedure actually, because we allocate terms into row and column table, and then itself, our training procedure also follows this kind of alternative optimization process. We first allocate the table, and then based on this allocation, we go through all the data and train those row column vectors, and then we further optimize this allocation based on the existing row column model, and get a new allocation and continue the training of the row and column vector again, repeatedly. And actually, I think this is just a kind of a high-level model procedure. And given this kind of idea, we have the clear advantage. First of all, you can see that this method we call light RNN get a very small model size compared with other existing methods. If they're still directly using the vector. And also, by this kind of simplicity, we didn't hurt the accuracy. Like this kind of perplexity we list here is the accuracy for the language model training. The lower, the better. Yeah, so this is the current result for this two-component RNN training. And given this kind of new methods, actually we can apply this directly to many text-related tasks, like language model itself, and also expanding to the machine translation and sentiment analysis. All these things listed there. And actually, besides of the text processing, because this technology itself is kind of general, we can extend to many scenarios that has large output or large vocabulary. In this case, you can even think about like using this technology for a large category classification task, like the web classification, and also those large scale face recognition with millions of characters. Categories, yes. And I think this kind of methods really have the advantage, and we can really leverage this existing hardwares, because this hardware actually has limited size of memory, and if we can express model in such compact compact version, then it can be easily fit into like the GPU FPGA training, and also the mobile device. And also, like if we have smaller size of model, given we still keep the data parallel training, we need to communicate the model itself. Then, if the model is compact, and the communication cost will be smaller. So that's the basic advantage of this kind of methods. Okay, this is the part for the big model how to handle the big model issue in this deep learning training. And I will continue to talk about the parallel training. Like in this talk, a previous talk, Professor Guo has mentioned about the parallel training exactly happened in the data, especially for the data parallel training. There's kind of dilemma. So one is one thing is if we use the synchronous training, like every machine just need to wait for each other. Slower ones will cost a lot of time, waste a lot of time. And if we take the asynchronous training, like those based on parameter server, we can get the model to local and train, then update to the premise server. Premise server will host the model and commit the update. But in this case, there will happen some called delayed communication because the local model always is later, is old than the premise server version. So the local computed gradient, when it updates to the premise server, and premise server side, the model already goes one or several steps ahead. And then the gradient update will become kind of not so theoretically correct. And then if we take some close look into this so-called delay problem, actually we want to compute this up-to-date gradient based on the parameter at time t plus tau. But essentially, we in this asynchronous training process, we actually just compute based on the parameter at time t. And as this first term is actually the asynchronous training, this kind of original asynchronous training, what they are doing, they just take the first term and ignore all the others. And actually, if we can bring all these components back, then probably we solve the asynchronous update problem. But if we really look at this problem, it's kind of non-trivial because all the other components are hard to compute. Like based on this kind of gradient on the gradient, and it's essentially the Hessian matrix. And like the currently we are training model with million parameter, and this kind of Hessian matrix will be either computationally or storage-wise very costly. So it's hard to really do that exactly. So then we need to find out some way to efficiently can handle this problem. And like luckily we find this kind of theorem, and given the loss functions taking the form of negative log likelihood, it can be kind of deduction there and use the gradient, some kind of transformation to approximate the high order derivatives. This is kind of proved, and it's actually the gradient is unbiased prediction for the estimation for the second order gradient. And actually in this case we can somehow use the first order gradient to approximate the second order thing, and then help us to bring back at least the second term. And to this kind of situation, then we effectively improve the asynchronous training. And this is the new rule of update. We call that DCASGD. It is delay compensated ASGD. And that last term is what we bring back and based on the previous theory argument. And we also prove that this one can converge at a faster converge rate than ASGD. I am not going into detail. And we try out based on some state of art model. And this is training based on ResNet, which is holds the winning position last year's ImageNet. And we try out the SGD and synchronous SGD and async SGD, and also our methods. We can find that our DC SGD can be closely aligned with the SGD, which is the single machine version, and the ASGD actually cannot reach that kind of efficiency. And especially at the first row is the four node experiment, and the second row is the eight node experiment. We can find that when the node is the node number is larger, then actually the delay will be larger. So the ASGD itself can be much worse. However, this compensated algorithm can really still bring back the accuracy. Yes, so this is our work in the DCSGD part. And actually, we have already collaborate with the CNTK, Microsoft CNTK team to really check this new technology of asynchronous training inside. And based on here is some kind of benchmark with the other, all the other deep learning toolkits. The left side is the single machine training speed, and the right side is the scale up ability of different toolkit. Actually, you can find CNTK is fast for single single GPU training, and its speed is essentially faster in the iron training, which is LSTM algorithm, LSTM model. And also, when we look at the right side, the scale up ability, that can be really doing good in CNTK side. We can find that the orange bar is always increase along with more GPU coming inside this experiment. And more than like DCASGD is just one kind of asynchronous update. And actually, we have the DMTK which, project on the GitHub. And we inside DMTK, we have this parameter server solution we call Multiversal. And it has already included all kind of asynchronous and synchronous update method. And users can easily use this algorithm and test in their experiment and also innovate based on that. And we can support all kinds of network layers and deploying a lot of computational platforms. And besides of deep learning, actually, we also conduct a lot of research work on, conduct a lot of work in all kinds of large-scale machine learning tasks. Here is some sample of that. I would like to mention there's a light GPM there. The right side is the figure we compare with XGBoost, which is the current state-of-art GPDT method widely used in the open source domain. We can have very good performance here. Okay, so I think this is my talk. Thanks a lot. Thank you.